This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. A funny thing happened on the way to Brexit today. We'll tell you about that. Also, the agriculture economy and going a couple of miles, metaphorically speaking, with the CEO of Brooks Running from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thursday, the 3rd of November. Glad you could be with us, as always, everybody. Dateline London from the pen of Lord Chief Justice John Thomas, the most senior judge in the United Kingdom, a ruling today that British Prime Minister Theresa May cannot just go ahead with that whole Brexit thing as she pleases, but rather that she will need Parliament's blessing to lead Great Britain out of the European Union. It's just the latest wrinkle in an already very, I guess you'd have to say, complicated set of negotiations. Andrew Walker is the economics correspondent for our partners at the BBC. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Kai.
Certainly seems like a very big deal, is it?
Well, I suppose it is potentially, and certainly politically it is. It's generated an awful lot of heat on this side of the Atlantic. A lot of people talking about plots to betray the will of the people, undermine the vote to leave the European Union. I think in practice, it's going to be more of an issue of it being a little bit more difficult, more time-consuming, more parliamentary procedures involved. But I don't think it means that it isn't going to happen.
It does seem, though, that it adds some uncertainty to the mix, certainly in terms of timing. So if I'm an international investor or a foreign company thinking about the UK, this complicates my thinking, yeah?
Yeah, I guess that's right. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has said that her timetable is to start the process of leaving formally, triggering what is called Article 50, by the end of March. And I suppose it is conceivable that this ruling might lead to a delay in that. Having said that, all that the ruling means is that she's got to have to go through Parliament before doing it. And the view is that that does involve a new piece of legislation, which is not straightforward, but I suppose it might be conceivable that that could be done quickly enough to enable her original timetable to be implemented.
That would take some parliamentary maneuvering, though, I imagine, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's certainly going to be complicated. And I suppose one of the reasons that some people who support leaving the European Union are worried is because it was well known before the vote that a majority of members of Parliament did not support the decision to leave. And so some fear that they might bring their own personal preferences to bear when they come to vote.
As far as we know, though, today's gyrations in the pound and in the markets, Brexit still means Brexit.
Yes, but with perhaps more possibility, I think, at least this is what the markets seem to be suggesting, that we'll end up with one of the rather softer versions that preserves slightly more of the barrier-free access to the European Union market that British business currently enjoys.
What do you suppose Britain's, for now, partners in the European Union across the channel are thinking as they look at today's ruling? Are they just rolling their eyes again?
I think they probably are, frankly, yes. Some of them have expressed a desire for Britain to get on with it, having been sorry that the referendum went the way it did, but I think many of Britain's partners think that it is clearly going to happen, and they would rather it simply happened sooner rather than later, so that the rest of the European Union knows where it stands, because there is a negotiation with an uncertain outcome that will be relevant to both sides.
Andrew Walker is the economic correspondent at the BBC. Andrew, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Kai.
On Wall Street today, 5 days till the election, 8 consecutive down days in the market. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Should you be in the market for a new car, you might know there are two new electric vehicles coming next year, the Chevy Bolt and the next generation Toyota Prius plug-in. The thing is, the EV market, the electric vehicle market, has yet to dazzle. We are buying just half the number of them that President Obama predicted when he took office. So today, the White House announced a plan to bring more charging stations online, notably on key highway corridors. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Scott Tong has that story.
Companies tend not to build charging stations because there aren't enough electric cars, but people won't buy those cars unless they can charge them. Chicken, egg. So the White House plans to build 48 highway charging corridors where you can someday charge up every 50 miles.
It's a normalization effect.
Auto market forecaster Alan Baum says this kind of thing can change buyer psychology.
If you can see that there is an infrastructure that not necessarily rivals the gas stations, but is enough to allay your concern, then that will lead people to be more comfortable.
Fact is, most electric cars are driven locally, not long distance. But something about the open road matters to drivers who want their cars to go everywhere, says Sam Jaffe at Cairn Energy Research Advisors.
We want to be able to transport our kids to school and then go off-roading.
So, if you build it, will they drive? Electric vehicle skeptic John DiCicco at the University of Michigan Energy Institute says EVs have a lot of challenges. They're small, they charge slowly, and there's price.
Electric vehicles are inherently more costly and have less capacity for most consumers than gasoline vehicles. That value gap hasn't really changed.
One thing the charging corridors will get us is new freeway signs. Next to fast food exit 9A will be a charging station icon, too. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
It was the wee small hours of this morning in Cleveland before the final out was recorded, but the Cubs did it. The best Game 7 in a good long while, if you ask me. Chicago is getting ready for a parade tomorrow, starting at Wrigley Field. And while pretty much every other player in Major League Baseball would happily trade places with any given member of the Cubs, those players do have something to look forward to, too. A nice end-of-year bonus check, as Marketplace's Jed Kim explains.
The postseason players pool was negotiated for in the collective bargaining agreement because while team owners make money on extra games, players are salaried, so...
There's no explicit pay for being in the postseason.
Andrew Zimbalist teaches economics at Smith College. The pool takes a portion of ticket sales from their first few games of each round of the postseason. Why not all games?
By restricting the players to the gate from the first four games, at least it appears that the players have all of the incentive in the world to win each and every game and not to tank or not to blow a particular game so that they get more money from the gate of the next game.
Of course, Zimbalist says it's not likely they do that. We're talking about a relatively small amount of cash. Last year's winners, the Kansas City Royals, each took home about $370,000. Not much to players with multi-million dollar contracts. Scott Rosner is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. He says plenty of this year's champs don't have those deals.
So when you look at the Cubs, their better players are actually lower salaried because they are younger, by and large. For those players, when you're making $500,000 and you get a bonus check for about, you know, half, if not more, of that amount, it makes a nice difference.
Players vote on how to share out the pool. They can even include non-players. No word yet on what the breakdowns will be. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace. We'll be right back.
We're going to get the October unemployment report tomorrow, 8:30 Washington time. It'll tell us how many new jobs the economy added last month and what the unemployment rate is, with one really important caveat. Not included in that report is the agriculture economy. In fact, it's called the non-farm payroll report. And yes, there are ever fewer Americans living and working on farms now, but the ag economy isn't doing all that well, as Marketplace's Annie Baxter tells us.
Teresa Gilley has been farming for 30 years. She's a petite, pretty woman with rose lipstick and blonde hair. And when she's having a bad year farming, she heads to the grocery store.
Tom! I'm in the cracker aisle.
The Tom she's looking for is Tom Swanson, the owner. He's let Gilley pick up some hours in the store's deli in the past, when her farm income's been down.
I needed a winter job, and Tom let me work here, so...
And he might be back this fall.
And he might be back this fall.
Despite their kidding around, times are leaner for both of them. A few years ago, wheat, which is one of Gilley's crops, sold for as much as $13 a bushel. Now it's closer to $4. Corn and soybeans have also tumbled from their recent highs. And in this tiny farming town of 1,000 people, when farmers suffer, so does everyone else, including Swanson.
I mean, it's a farming community. It is. Look at the name of the store. It's the Farmer Store. It was built by farmers to begin with. We're right smack in the middle of it, and, well, it's simple. When the farmers have money in their pockets, everybody has money in their pockets around here.
One would think, you know, people have to eat, whether or not they're making money, but they're maybe going to stop putting the extra things into their shopping cart or something?
There's probably a little more hamburger and a little less steak.
That's true for Gilley. She and her husband are in their early 50s and thought they were close to paying off some big debts. Then crop prices plunged. They lost $250,000 on their farm last year and had to restructure several loans, which will take a lot longer to pay off now.
Me walking out of the debt that I had planned for another 3 or 4 years from now is now another 10 years down the road. And it hurts.
Things look a little better for Gilley this year with some price recovery in soybeans, her other crop. But she says she probably still won't turn a profit.
This is a recession, if you're making a general economy comparison.
Scott Irwin is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. He says some Midwestern farmers might break even this year after a big drop in income last year, but those with poor yields could still face steep losses. It's bad, but he says it's not as bad as the farm crisis of the 1980s, when farmers had to sell off land at fire sale prices.
At that point in time, we had a solvency crisis, meaning the double whammy of declining crop prices and skyrocketing interest rates due to the Federal Reserve change in policy in 1979 really put agriculture in a vice.
Most farms use debt to fund their operations, and the Fed's decision to raise interest rates to fight inflation made loans more expensive for everyone. Irwin says today it's more of a cash flow crisis, and farmers are coming off historically high crop prices, so many at least have savings to spend down. That said, some might decide to get out of farming altogether, which raises the question of who will take over when farming already lacks appeal for many young people.
Are you Bryce?
Yes.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Teresa Gilley and her husband had hoped their son Bryce might take over their farm. He's 25 and has an agronomy degree. But the big drop in crop prices has spooked him a bit. He's having second thoughts about farming.
It's a challenge that I even question if I'm willing to take on.
And even if he does choose to stick with farming, the financial help his parents thought they'd be able to provide is not available now. In Halleck, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Coming up,
not every shoe is a great shoe. And I think frequent runners that put in a lot of mileage figure that out.
What's in a shoe? But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 28 points today, about a 10%, 17,930. The NASDAQ dropped 47 points, 0.9%, 50.58. The S&P 500 declined 9 points, 0.4% to close at 2,088, an 8-day streak, as I said. Facebook warned after the bell last night that its growth rates for advertising revenue are set to decline. Thus, Facebook declined as well, 5.6%. Twitter off a 0.1%. Yahoo, hey, look, it's still trading off 1.1%. GoPro, once a darling, not so much anymore. Terrible profit, shares off 20% or more after the bell. I saw a tweet today, can't credit it, sorry. Don't remember who it was. Instead of GoPro, ought to be called Go Amateur. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. This is going to sound distinctly un-gee-whiz, but there is big business to be had in how we talk to each other at work. First of all, just think of the size of that potential market. And second, you wave increased productivity in front of employers and they're in, right? First among equals in this category right now is probably a three-year-old San Francisco-based company called Slack. It calls itself a messaging app for teams, to give you some sense. 4 million users, including us here at Marketplace. It's a bit of a tech world darling. And here is how you know they're onto something. The big guns are muscling in. Facebook's Workplace went live a couple of weeks ago, and this week Microsoft's Teams is launching. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has that story.
Here's a sampling of what you might see on Slack. Just made fresh pot of coffee. Following up on yesterday's meeting, emoji happy face. It's the new office shorthand.
We're spending a whole lot less time in email and more time collaborating through electronic tools that help us work more quickly and work sort of lighter weight. Email's a sort of heavy tool.
David Pakman is at the venture capital firm Venrock. Pakman says popular new tools like Slack threaten Microsoft and its $23 billion Office software suite. With other companies eyeing this market, including Facebook, Microsoft plans to fully roll out Teams, its own chitty chat software, early next year to its 85 million business software users for free. Company executive Brian McDonald.
We wanted something that was really focused on what I call the tribe. The tribe is the group of people that are on kind of one project together, and they've got to really closely collaborate with each other.
Earlier this week, Slack took out an ad in the New York Times congratulating Microsoft, saying, quote, "We're genuinely excited to have some competition." James Allworth of the tech podcast Exponent says Slack should be careful. The new chat app will be seamlessly connected to programs like Word and Excel.
A lot of what people are going to be talking about inside of these tools are documents or spreadsheets or presentations that are going to be resting inside these applications.
Allworth recognizes Microsoft's size advantage, but are people going to be cool sharing their video clips of dudes doing backflips in a donut shop on there? Thinking face emoji. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Let me just say that Slack coffee channel is really handy. Today's installment of Politics is a Business, no disrespect to democracy intended, comes to us courtesy of local television and radio stations. Not too many people on the receiving end of all the political ads that are running this cycle enjoy them, but those broadcasters are profiting quite nicely from a steady flow of cash from the Trump and Clinton campaigns and unexpectedly close races down ballot. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
You've heard all about red, blue, and purple states. This election, there's also a green state, as in cold, hard campaign cash.
September was tremendous. October will be a record spending month in this market for political spending. There's no doubt about it.
That is a very happy Mike Murphy. He's general manager of KMOV-TV in St. Louis, where Republican Senator Roy Blunt is facing a surprise challenge from Democrat Jason Kander. Kander's running an ad where he puts together a rifle, blindfolded.
I approve this message. Because I'd like to see Senator Blunt do this.
Murphy estimates that revenue from political ads at his station is up 25% over this time 4 years ago. More political advertising than he's ever seen in St. Louis.
You know, I've heard about it in other markets, but this has been tremendous here.
Most of that money is coming from down ballot contests, the Missouri Senate campaign, and the race for governor. Democrats started pouring money into tight congressional and state races all over the country when Hillary Clinton had a comfortable lead over Donald Trump. Now that the race is tightening up, Democrats are also pouring more money into states they thought Clinton had sewn up, like Virginia. That's just fine with Andrew Shearer, who owns two radio stations in northwestern Virginia.
This has been a considerably higher uptick in advertising from what happened 4 years ago.
Shearer estimates political advertising at his stations is up more than 50% over this time in 2012, and he's getting more ad placements from Democrats as polls show the presidential race tightening in Virginia.
I believe that the placements that the Democrats are doing are directly related to the fact that Trump is back up in the polls.
And here's the thing. TV and radio stations have to give the lowest published ad rate to the candidates, but they're not the only ones advertising. Super PACs have jumped in, too, running ads in unexpectedly close races. And they don't get the lowest rates. They have to pay whatever the market will bear, maybe two or even three times the normal rate, says Steve Passwader of Kantar Media CMAG.
If you're trying to buy the 11 o'clock news in Orlando right now, good luck. You're going to need it. And it's going to be incredibly expensive. And the game is, do you want to get the spot to air or don't you?
Of course, the super PACs and campaigns do want to get their messages out. So when races tighten and the going gets tough, they bite the bullet and turn to TV. Travis Ridout is co-director of the Wesleyan Media Project, which tracks political advertising. He says TV is still king when it comes to these types of ads, with campaigns and super PACs spending huge amounts.
Now $500 million spent in Senate races, in House races, almost $200 million in the presidential race. We're nearing $700 million.
And we still have 5 days to go before the election. If the presidential race tightens even more, get ready for more of this.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
The New York City Marathon is this Sunday. Technically, it's the TCS New York City Marathon, Tata Consultancy Services, because, you know, branding and sponsorship. Anyway, on a decent number of the feet pounding out those 26.2 miles will be shoes made by Brooks. They don't have the name recognition of Nike, for instance, but that is almost by design because shoes is all they do. CEO Jim Weber is the guy who trimmed down the Brooks product line. Thanks for coming on the program.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So when you came into this company in 2001, 15-ish or so years ago, you actually made the decision that you were only going to be running. Why?
You know, it's interesting because there's just conventional wisdom in athletic footwear and apparel that you have to play all the categories. And frankly, it comes from decades ago when you had to keep a factory busy. But we saw an opportunity to really create a meaningful brand that was relevant to runners.
Well, and you guys, you pride yourselves on your running technology, the shoe technology, which I, as a runner, I get, I appreciate. I will say full disclosure here, I wear Brooks shoes when I run. But to non-runners, they will hear this and say, come on, man, a running shoe is a running shoe is a running shoe. What is it that makes a Brooks shoe a Brooks shoe?
Well, you know, running is a repetitive motion, and for most people on asphalt, the trail is a fabulous place to be, but not everyone has access to trails. So most people run on asphalt. And if you think about carpal tunnel on a keyboard all day, anything you do for 30, 40, 60 minutes an hour, a couple hours, mechanics matter. So Brooks literally for 50 years has been leading in the biomechanics of human motion as it relates to running. And I would say that not every shoe is a great shoe. And I think frequent runners that put in a lot of mileage figure that out.
What do you say then when you see somebody like Meb Keflezighi, right, a leading elite runner in this country and the world, wearing something like Skechers?
You know what? Meb is a phenomenal athlete and icon for running. You know, we're huge fans of Meb. And the truth is, there's a lot of people that literally could almost run on anything and they'd be healthy and fast. Meb might be one of those guys, but, you know, we're trying
to earn. Could he be better and faster in Brooks, right? That's the question you have to be asking.
You know, I think that one I couldn't answer, but here's the point is that for most people, it isn't about beating Meb. It's about running mile after mile comfortably and healthy and hopefully into old age. And the truth is in running, and it may be different than golf or a lot of other equipment sports, is the right shoe for you is probably not the right shoe for Meb. So that's why
exist. Whatever Meb wears is probably not right for me, but whatever.
There you go. That's the point.
It has been said that running is a cyclical business, which sort of does not compute for me. Help me understand that.
You know, I don't buy that. I think the cycles that come through every category in athletic footwear and apparel, there's a fashion element to it. There's a casual fashion lifestyle in terms of the uniform that people wear when they go to get their Starbucks coffee. But, you know, running is timeless. It's always been 40 to 50 million people in the U.S. You can more than double that globally that run for fitness. So there's cycles in the active lifestyle where people try different things. They might run more. They might go to the gym more. That's always been there, but running is timeless.
When was the last time you ran? How far did you go?
I ran 4 miles.
What kind of pace are you doing?
Oh, that's confidential.
Come on, man, give it up.
I think I'm the slowest person at Brooks, Kai. I did a 3.5-hour marathon many, many years ago, wow. And I've slowed tremendously since that time.
Jim Weber, the CEO of Brooks Running Company. Jim, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
This final note on the way out, which comes with the observation that I made my kids peanut butter and Nutella sandwiches in their lunches today. I mention that because the FDA basically wants to know. Nutella wants the Food and Drug Administration to reclassify the oh-so-delicious chocolate hazelnut spread from the other dessert category to the one that includes other spreads like jams and honeys. They think, the company does, that it'll convince more people to use this stuff. My question is, what about people who have, like, you know, 3... maybe 4 big spoonfuls of it, maybe 5, just, you know, straight. Asking for a friend. All right, we got to go. The Dow off 28 points today, a 10%. The NASDAQ down 47 points, 9/10%. The S&P 500 down 9 points, 4/10%. 8 losing sessions in a row. John Buckley, Deirdre Depke, Eve Epstein, George Judson, Suzanne Levy, Andrea Seabrook, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. Our interim managing editor is John Gordon. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.